ซีบีก็ยังไม่ก็เชื่อว่าที่นั่นซีบียังไม่ก็เชื่อด้วยแต่ซีบอกนั่งจุลยาซีบอกคุณแม่ที่เลี้ยงจีร้านเลยเนี่ยว่าเจ็บไปเนี่ยที่เลี้ยงเนี่ยจีเก้ของคนรู้มาแล้วเชื่อนี่พาจีซีบอกคุณแม่ว่าแต่พาเนี่ยไม่คิดว่าจะซีบอกคุณแม่ตาที่นี่นั่นสุสุกี้แต่จีเก้เชื่อชื่อยังไม่เชื่อด้วยที่นี่ก็เลยว่าก็เลยรู้ว่าที่นี่ก็เลยนะก็เลยที่เกี่ยว ดังนั้นดาวดูเรียนเจนเดลี่สุบิสุบาเซียดังแต่สุสุลยานีนั่นแสดงสุสุกังอาเทจินี่กี่ดวงอะไรด้วยอันนี้เดลี่อันนี้จิกดวงดาวดูเรียนที่นี่กี่ดวงที่เกี่ยงเสียมเจ้าทำจิกดวงที่เกี่ยงมีดวงที่เลี้ยงเจนี่กี่จิกยงกุยเสียมเจ้าทำจิตดวงยงมกอชูสัมเจ้าอยู่ที่นี่กี่มันจะเสวกงคุเรศจิกคือสิ่งนั่นที่นี่กี่ชื่อแล้วเดี๋ยวอันนี้กุลงอันนี้จิกจะช่วยเสียมจิกุเนี่ยละ
Good evening, everyone. Yes, no, they are. Yeah. So last week we finished looking at the third perfection, the practice of patience, or the perfection of patience. So we looked at all three divisions there. So first of all, practicing patience when others give when others harm us. So here the practice is to ensure that one's mind stays calm and gentle rather than allowing anger or frustration or annoyance to arise and then responding in an aggressive manner or a harmful manner to the person who's giving us a hard time. Then we looked at the second type, which was practicing patience in terms of one's own suffering experience. And here again, not allowing oneself to become overwhelmed by the problem, by the problems and difficulties that we experience within samsara, but to rather transform them and take them on the path and thereby practice patience. And then thirdly, we looked at practicing patience in terms of the problems that we encounter when practicing Dharma. So when one practices Dharma, one will still have difficulties and obstacles. And then these are to be expected, and we shouldn't allow ourselves to become discouraged or feel that it's too difficult. Rather, we need to practice patience. And we spoke about how we can practice patience by taking on these problems, taking on them in the form of taking on the suffering of others. And this practice of transforming problems onto the path of taking on the suffering of others is something we can do with all types of harm, all types of practice of patience, where we can imagine through the motivation of wanting others to be freed from suffering, that whatever difficulties and obstacles and problems we ourselves experience, may those causes that have led to this suffering experience, those same causes that others have accumulated, may they all ripen on me now. In other words, by me experiencing the ripening result of my own negativity, may I experience the negative karma of all beings, and thereby may no being ever suffer like this again. So in this way, with the motivation of a bodhisattva, we can transform all problems on the path through practicing patience. So this way of thinking, we need to train in this way of thinking, and we need to do this repeatedly over a sustained period, and then transformation will come about in our minds. We'll continue now, coming to the fourth perfection that is on page 245, transcendent diligence, or as we usually say, joyous perseverance. So we come to the fourth perfection, that of joyous perseverance, and so we'll look at what it is, what its entity is, and what its divisions are, and the practice itself. First of all, then, what is the practice or the perfection of joyous perseverance? So the mind of joyous perseverance is a mind that takes delight in virtue. So the object is always a virtuous object, and then the mind takes delight or generates joy with regard to engaging in that object. So that is the perfection or the practice of joyous perseverance. It's the mind that delights in virtue.
And then another thing we learn that the kawa la la do then another thing that kala saya la kau ro siu ro kala kacil pe saya kau and then si saya kau siu ro the kala la kau kawa siu ro then the kala ya saya ki.
We take delight in a variety of different things. So we all enjoy eating, and we may make a tremendous effort to ensure that we have delicious food to eat. So yeah, we're making efforts and we're generating joy, but this is not the practice of joyous perseverance. Likewise, some may engage in activities of killing, either maybe for sport or for cleaning their home or for work. And so here they're taking delight in something and they're making effort in it, but this, of course, is not the practice of joyous perseverance. And then similarly, others may take great delight in sports or exercising or forms of entertainment such as singing. And they may make great efforts to bring these about, but this too doesn't constitute joyous perseverance. So with those previous illustrations, whilst we were taking great joy in what we were doing, such as eating or preparing delicious food and making efforts, despite there being joy and effort involved, this wasn't the practice of joyous perseverance, because the object needs to be a virtuous object. But being a virtuous object alone doesn't doesn't ensure that it is the practice of joyous perseverance, because there must be one must take delight in engaging in this virtuous object. So there are these two characteristics, that of being a virtuous object, and secondly, taking delight. So let's give some illustrations then of what would be joyous perseverance. So these would be the various practices associated with the Buddha Dharma, such as engaging in meditation and taking great joy in engaging in this virtuous activity of meditation, or taking great joy in practicing generosity, taking great joy in guarding one's ethical conduct, and taking great joy in being patient in the face of hardship. So these are all illustrations of the practice of joyous perseverance, because we have a virtuous object and we are taking delight in engaging with this object. And of course, another obvious illustration would be taking delight when helping others. So helping others is a virtuous activity, and one takes delight in that virtuous activity of helping others. Then our text starts by listing the three divisions of joyous perseverance. So armor-like joyous perseverance in action, and joyous perseverance that cannot be stopped. So the first one, we look at the first division, armor-like joyous perseverance. So we all know what armor is. So here, the soldier will don or wear armor so as to protect them in battle. So this is the function of this first division of this is the function of joyous perseverance in this first division.
Tenenga to komja ne shinyo dupsya da komja tingi dupsya da lo ma bu dupo re lo ma bu bu kale shu horo wa da ji ti jesu sa mare samna na ma sim shum ne le ga che ma thu wa che go wa di na shin ge wa kare shin ne inji ji ge kare che o de ding yi wa sa ma ne yi ngu ma re sam ji de ne so 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 ra na ge ma so so shim sim shu ja ne ja wa yin na de ne sim sim shu pa che de wa yin na ane jawa jile kewe shule jawa jile bezu jiga marwa jine isa jine ki sem shumba ji ma mewa soyogu re lakta.
In the same way, Anna used to protect soldiers of old from weapons such as swords and arrows and the like. Joyous perseverance, this mind of joyous perseverance, also protects us. So the way that joyous perseverance protects us is it protects us from a mind that thinks that engaging in virtuous practices are too difficult, that a mind that that has become weak or dispirited, that's lost its vigor. So joyous perseverance guards us from thinking, oh, whilst, for example, whilst Buddhahood would be so wonderful to attain and there'd be so many benefits, it takes an immeasurable amount of effort and time. This is just too difficult. I cannot do it. So joyous perseverance guards us from falling into that direction. Or similarly, we may hear about all the tremendous advantages that come with the mind of calm abiding and give rise to the wish to generate calm abiding. But then as we start to train and we see how very difficult it is to subdue and discipline the mind, we may think, oh, this is just too much. I cannot do this. This is beyond my ability. And then our mind becomes weak and dispirited. So joyous perseverance serves, or the armor-like joyous perseverance, serves to guard our mind from that way of thinking. And this, of course, then is the case for any kind of virtuous practice, where we may think, this is too difficult, this is beyond me. And here again, this armor-like joyous perseverance guards us from falling into this wrong way of thinking. This way of thinking, where we think, oh, Buddhahood is too difficult to attain, or whilst I'd love to have this mind of calm abiding because I can see the benefits, but it's just too hard. This way of thinking is actually a form of laziness. So there are a variety of different types of laziness, and the one that is being referred to here is a laziness of discouragement. So the mind of joyous perseverance, or armor-like joyous perseverance, protects us from this type of laziness. This type of laziness that thinks that a virtuous activity is beyond us, is too difficult for us. So, for example, if there's a delicious meal before us, but we don't know that it's delicious, maybe it just looks ordinary, and we think, oh, I'm not going to eat this, then we'll lose the opportunity of enjoying this delicious meal. And this is similar to the outcome of falling under the influence of this mind of laziness, this laziness of discouragement. Because it's this form of laziness prevents us from engaging in virtue that we are capable of engaging in. So to protect us from making such an error, we need to generate this armor-like joyous perseverance. Rather, how we should train ourselves to think is to start out by reminding ourselves that all the great and holy beings that we've either read about or we've met or we've seen, they were once like us. All of the great Buddhas and Bodhisattvas were once exactly like we are, deluded, ordinary beings. But they heard the same precious teachings that we heard. They then decided to follow the advice that's given, to implement the advice that is given, to train in the way that the Buddha Dharma teaches one. And through doing that, they transformed themselves from being an ordinary person just like us, to become great bodhisattvas and Buddhas. So there, to guard ourselves from falling into this laziness of discouragement, we should remind ourselves of the good fortune that we have. We have a precious human rebirth, we've met a spiritual friend, and we have the opportunity to receive teachings and to reflect, to meditate on those teachings. And we can all engage in acts of accomplishing virtue and in a sustained meditation practice. So we can do this. Thinking this way serves to generate confidence within us, a strength of mind, and overcome the possibility of this laziness of discouragement overtaking us. And rather, through generating confidence, we can achieve our actual potential. So we need to then generate this mind thinking, no matter how difficult these practices are, no matter the session needs to be, and how frequent these sessions need to be over what, no matter what extended period of time, I need to training so as to cultivate these various virtuous minds of the Buddha Dharma, I will persevere. And not only will I persevere, but I'll do so joyfully with an understanding of the gain, of the goal that will be attained. So this is the meaning of joyous perseverance. Persevering through all the difficulties, but doing so with a mind of joy, a mind of delight, being aware of the goal that awaits us. And this then is like donning armor before one engages in battle. So this is the armor of joyous perseverance that we should generate within our minds before engaging in virtue, because this will give us the strength of mind to know that we have the ability to achieve all the goals of the Buddha Dharma, to achieve all the goal, our spiritual goals that we have set for
ourselves. then the song rose masona, chepsana, boy, tong my yell, chepsana, or some kind, chepsana didn't review by the tongson, or daddy tong jing. And then Yaka Karine, Jigliaka Chi, Digi, Tumjay, I was an adding a jing and there's some legal one. Snadina, she, quite Yaka Karina, Digi, and then Tona, and then Tono, and Dip Jagu, Devaligo, Dina, she, and the Jibbe, San Yeta, Jerusalem, begin Yamin, Jabatilla, Yendin, 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 Yendin.
Just like in any avenue of life, before embarking on a venture, one first weighs up the pros and the cons. One looks at the benefits of engaging in something and the faults of not doing so. And then seeing the benefits and seeing that they are attainable, one wholeheartedly engages in an endeavor. And most of these things that we aspire to and strive for are not achieved immediately and with ease, but we need to make sustained effort over a period of time. So that's the case with worldly activities, and it's certainly the case with spiritual activities. So for ourselves, as practitioners of the Buddha Dharma, we need to come to understand the Buddha Dharma, and in the process of coming to understand the Buddha Dharma, we come to understand the qualities of the various attainments or the various accomplishments along the path. And seeing these qualities that are to be attained, we generate the wish of how wonderful it would be if I develop these within my own continuum, thinking about the benefits that would come to myself as well as to others, and thinking about this again and again so that the wish to attain this goal becomes consuming. We then are ready to put in the required effort over the length of time that is required so as to attain these goals. So this is the practice of joyous perseverance. And we need to remind ourselves that the reason that we are still an ordinary being is because up to this point we haven't put in sufficient effort and energy into our practice to have progressed further. And the reason why in past lifetimes beings who were at the same level as us have gone on to achieve their bodhisattva grounds and maybe even Buddhahood is because they made that decision that they will not waste this opportunity and they will utilize all the fantastic conditions that they have and bring about the attainment of a goal that will bring greatest benefits to all beings. So being aware of this opportunity we have, we need to make this commitment not to lose it, not to let it go to waste, but to utilize it and bring about the attainment of qualities that we all individually can, without a doubt, achieve. So that's the decision we need to make, and that is part of this practice of Amalike joyous perseverance. So we first generate the wish based on knowledge, on understanding, generate the wish to engage in a practice. So the first step is to accumulate knowledge, and then one will give rise to the wish to engage in a particular practice. And then one should do so with joy, and that joy should come about naturally or spontaneously arise, because one has been thinking about the qualities that will come through achieving one's goal, and that of course will give one great joy. And then one engages in the practice with this mind of joy, persevering through all the difficulties for the required duration. And this is the case for all practices. So whether one is meditating on the benefits of the practice of generosity, and then engaging in the various types of the practice of generosity, one should do so with persevering through all obstacles, and doing so with a joyous, delighting mind. And similarly with the practice of ethical conduct. So to see this, the practice of ethical conduct, this mind of restraint, seeing it through the lens of the benefits that come through attaining the goals, through attaining the results of the practice of ethical conduct, then a mind of delight arises in the practice of restraining the mind. A mind of delight arises in practicing ethical conduct. And similarly with patience. So being patient in difficult circumstances, keeping the mind spacious and calm in difficult circumstances, doing this with an understanding of the benefits that will come, of the attainments that will come through accomplishing this practice, one then generates joy and perseveres through all the difficulties that are associated with this practice. So this is the mind of joyous perseverance. Joyous perseverance is generated with or together with a practice of the Buddha Dharma. So the practice of joyous perseverance comes together with other practices of the Buddha Dharma. The obstacles to engaging in Dharma practice and generating this mind of joyous perseverance are the minds of laziness. So it was mentioned earlier that there are different types of laziness, and we mentioned the laziness of discouragement. A second type is the laziness of procrastination. So this is something that's very common, and we all probably have quite some familiarity with this mind. So the laziness of procrastination is a huge obstacle to the entry and the progression on the Buddha Dharma, on the various paths of the Buddha Dharma. Because through this mind, we have acknowledged the importance of engaging Buddhist practice, but we say, now's not the time. Tomorrow will be better. I have a lot to do, or I need to get together the right conditions. I will start tomorrow. And this tomorrow usually doesn't come. And then we maybe think, oh, actually I really do have too much to do. Next week will be better. And then we try and progress through all our various tasks, and we don't get there. Next week comes, but we're still too busy. And then, oh, now I have this obstacle, I have that to do, and next year, after this big project is finished. This is procrastination. Putting off something that we've recognized that's important, something we've recognized that is essential, but keep on delaying, keep on putting it off. And this is the laziness of procrastination.
Jawa
So how then does, so we've heard now about a couple of types of laziness, and that these, and it's quite clear that these are obstacles to any kind of spiritual progression. So then how can one prevent the arisal or prevent being overcome by the mind, by minds of laziness? Then it is sure of now. The example, Simpson say, and also Mitchell Simpson says that Rabo de. So we come to a quotation now. Okay. We come to a quotation at the bottom of page 245. Human life is like being in the slaughterer's pen. Death comes closer with every second. If you unhurriedly put off today until tomorrow, beware of tears and regret upon your deathbed. The meaning of this verse is quite clear. Through coming under the influence or being dominated by this laziness of procrastination, then we'll keep delaying, we'll keep putting off what we've recognized as important until the opportunity is lost. The way we need to look at our situation, which is in accordance with our actual situation, is that all of us are in a queue lining up to death. We don't know our place in this queue, but we are all in this line that ends in our death. And minute by minute, we progress along that queue towards attainment of our own death. So we don't know when our time will come, but it will eventually come. And if we keep procrastinating, it will, that time will eventually come before we have utilized our life well. The result of coming under the influence of this laziness of procrastination is we look at all our various activities and we say, I need to do this, I need to do that, I need to get these better conditions than I have right now, and then I will engage in Dharma practice. So maybe next year, or maybe next month. And the problem is, we keep delaying like this. But the one thing we can't delay is our own death. That will come. And when it comes, it's completely unknown. The only known thing is that it will come. And as we delay our practice starts or remains out in the future. But as we keep moment by moment delaying our practice, death nears us, approaches us moment by moment. And then, if we haven't changed, then when the time of death finally comes, our practice, our time of practice is still somewhere in the distance. But that distance will be in a future life. So therefore we need to start practicing, and we need to start practicing now.
Mm-hmm. ये 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 ये
What this verse shows us is the object of meditation so as to overcome this mind of laziness and to give rise to the mind of joyous perseverance is to think about impermanence. When you think and think about impermanence both on the course level, but in particular in terms of momentary change, that all impermanent phenomena change moment by moment by moment. And when one has reflected successfully on impermanence, then the mind of choice perseverance will naturally arise within us. So we need to think in particular about the lack of stability of our own life. So to think about the impermanence of life, thinking about that death itself is certain, but the time of death is completely uncertain. So if we delay engaging wholeheartedly in our practice until some future point, we may not still be in this body when that future point comes. And if we're thinking, for example, that we have too many activities now, or we our conditions aren't so good, we need better conditions, so therefore I will wait until next month or next year, then in reality our conditions may not be that much better in a month's time or a year's time, or the busyness of our life is probably not going to be that different in a month's time or a year's time. So rather, we need to understand that the opportunity that we have is incredibly valuable, it's incredibly precious, but it's also finite, and its time of ending is only coming closer. So thinking about impermanence like this again and again, then this will give a rise to a sense of urgency, and this will then lead to the mind of joyous perseverance, the mind that will then want to engage in practice, not do so out of obligation, but joyfully want to. So continuing to look at the different types of laziness, we looked earlier at the first type, the laziness of discouragement, where one feels that one cannot achieve these goals of these spiritual goals such as calm abiding or Buddhahood. And now we've just looked at a second type, the laziness of procrastination, where we put off virtuous activities that could be done now, we put them off till some time in the future. And the third type of laziness is that of the laziness of attachment to improper activities. So this laziness of attachment to improper activities is, like the other two types of laziness, also a major obstacle to the practice of Dharma. So here when the practitioner has, or the aspirant practitioner has given rise to an understanding of the importance of engaging in the cultivation of the minds of the Buddha Dhamma, but is not doing so. And the reason for not doing so is due to attachment to improper activities. Now, what's meant here by improper activities is not necessarily non-virtue. So these are kinds of things that fill up most of our time, or a lot of our time. So we could, for example, hang out with our friends, or relax in some way. And whilst these in themselves are not necessarily harmful, some benefit may even come from them, but the benefit that comes from these kinds of activities is very much to do with this life. And the kind of benefit that comes really is very slight. Certainly it has no great impact on our future lives in terms of benefit. So this is what is meant by improper activities, not necessarily non-virtuous activities, but activities that aren't bringing about attainment of good future rebirths or good conditions in future rebirths. So this type of laziness of attachment to improper activities, is another major obstacle to cultivating minds of the Buddha Dhamma. Then there's a quotation near the middle of page 246 from Longchenpa. Worldly preoccupations never end until the moment we die, but they end when we drop them, such is their nature. So this verse is very clear. I'll read it again. Worldly perceptions never end until the moment we die, but they end when we drop them, such is their nature. So this is something that we really should reflect on, because the activities of our life, all these variety worldly mundane activities, these never finish. Each individual activity, sure, that will end, but it's followed by a second and a third and a fourth, and they come along before the first has even ended, and there's always a long to-do list. So no matter how much energy and effort we put into accomplishing all these activities, they won't ever finish. So many of these activities we do need to do. It's not that they should be abandoned, but we should not use these as a reason not to engage in meditation or engage in study or other kinds of virtuous practice. Because as long as we keep focusing primarily on these kinds of activities, we will struggle to find the time to engage in our practice. We'll struggle to find the time to develop our minds and attain the spiritual qualities that we all desire. So we need to recognize that our worldly activities will never be completed. And if we keep working as hard as we can, even as hard as we are now, we will not finish when the time of death comes. There is no end to worldly activities. So therefore, we shouldn't allow these worldly activities to come in the way of our Dharma practice. Because if we do, we will lose this opportunity that we have.
Lehadi,
When reflecting on this nature of worldly activities, a very useful analogy is if we recall looking at the beautiful ocean. So the ocean, even on a still day, there's one wave coming in after the other, and there's one wave crashing on the shore, there's the next one forming behind it, and another one behind that. And this is how our worldly activities are. When one finishes, there's the next one rising up that has to be done immediately, and there's already two, three, four behind that. And this never, ever ends. So we need to come to recognize this. And through recognizing this doesn't mean we turn away and abandon everything else but Dharma practice, but it's about changing our priorities. Where we need to come to is recognizing the importance of our spiritual practice, recognizing that worldly activities never cease, and therefore reprioritizing. So for example, we should first start with our practice, start our day with our practice, and then engage in our various tasks for the day. Because if we do it the other way around, it's likely those tasks will consume all of our time. And even if they don't consume all of our time that day, they probably will consume all our energy. So therefore, change our priorities, cultivate the minds of the Dharma, generate them within us, do our practice well, and then engage in the activities that need to be done. Then there's a second verse also by Long Tempa. Our activities are like children's games. They go on as long as we continue. They stop as soon as we stop them. I'll read it again. Our activities are like children's games. They go on as long as we continue. They stop as soon as we stop them. So this verse from Long Tempa is liking the various activities that so consume our physical energy as well as our mental energy to being like a child and a child at play. So, for example, if we think of a child playing in their room, or maybe we stay with the beach, so the child is building sandcastles on the beach. So the child is having great fun, so it's generating joy in the child's mind. But other than bringing about a little bit of joy in that moment, what benefit comes from these sandcastles? So similarly, whilst a child engages in their play, and they, for them, it brings them some joy, but they also attach great importance to whatever game they're playing. We are the same in our various worldly activities, that we allow to consume our mind in the same way that a child's mind is consumed by play. And we attach great importance to these various activities that only bring about benefit for this life. And again, just like a child putting great importance on their game, that only brings them some very temporary benefit. So whilst we need to engage in most of the activities, the ordinary mundane activities that we do, we need to recognize that they just bring very temporary benefit. And therefore we need to continue to reflect on the benefit that comes from cultivating the minds of the Buddha Dharma. And then we'll be able to make a mature decision, an adult decision, over what is important. And thinking this way, we will be able to prioritize properly. Because we'll see that in cultivating, for example, minds of love and compassion with joyous perseverance will bring tremendous benefit for this and future lives. Engaging in practices such as generosity with a mind of joyous perseverance will bring about great benefit for this and future lives. Meditating on any virtuous objects, on any of the goals within the Buddha Dharma, will bring about great benefit to this and future lives. So thinking like this, it becomes much easier to prioritize and put aside all these various activities that take up our time and take up our physical and especially our mental energy, and rather engage primarily in our spiritual activities and thereafter do the worldly tasks that need to be done. So to summarize what we've just been looking at, we need to reflect on the nature of worldly activities and see that firstly, there is no end to them. And secondly, that whilst many of them are needed and benefit comes from them, that benefit only is of relevance to this life. Almost all worldly activities we engage in don't directly aid our attainment of our spiritual goals or bring benefit to our future lives. So rather, we need to have very clear to us the greater benefit that comes from engaging in spiritual practice. Because seeing the difference in benefit from worldly activities as opposed to spiritual activities will enable us to prioritize much more easily. And we'll be able then to, we'll be willing, very willing, to give over more time to our spiritual practice. And we won't feel we're taking time away from things that we enjoy, but rather giving time to something of great benefit. And in this way, we'll wholeheartedly want to engage in, for example, meditating on love and compassion. And wanting to do so, we will engage with a mind of joy. And wanting to do so, we will persevere through all the difficulties and problems that do come when engaging in spiritual practice. And we will do so knowing that through cultivating minds such as, for example, love and compassion, tremendous benefits come for ourselves and also all others that we encounter. And in this way, we bring benefit not just to ourselves, but to our loved ones, and in fact, society as a whole. And furthermore, these benefits don't only come in this life, but they will continue into our future lives. And moreover, or in particular, the benefits that from engaging in spiritual practice mean that our spiritual goals, the attainment of our spiritual goals, comes closer and closer. And then lastly, to bring about this mind of joyous perseverance, to bring about this eagerness to engage in virtue, we need to reflect on impermanence. In particular, looking at the tremendous qualities of the situation that we have, the opportunity that we have, and seeing its impermanence. Seeing that we have no better conditions than what we have right now, and that what we have right now is impermanent. These conditions that we have right now, if we create the right causes, will get better. But if we engage in worldly activities, these conditions are not likely to improve, but rather this opportunity will be lost. So therefore, before this opportunity ends, we need to use it well. And we need to use it to the best of our ability through reprioritizing our time. And thinking in this way, then the mind of choice perseverance will naturally arise. So that now brings us then to the third division of joyous perseverance. We've looked at the first two. Amma-like diligence, diligence in action, and now diligence that cannot be stopped, or joyous perseverance that cannot be stopped. The meaning then of this third division, joyous perseverance that cannot be stopped, is that by this point we have all engaged in a variety of virtuous activities, and so we need to guard the mind against being complacent with what we have done so far. So you may think, oh, I've received a teaching on that text, I don't need to receive the teaching. Or I've heard teachings on this particular topic, and whilst today I have the opportunity to receive teachings on that same topic, well, I don't need to again because I've heard this before. Or I've meditated on a particular topic, I don't need to meditate on this again. Or I've attained some understanding of a particular Dharma topic, then that's good enough. I can now move on. I don't need to do this again. So this is a mistake. Because if we have the opportunity to repeat a virtuous activity that we've already done, we should do so. Because through hearing a teaching on a subject that we've already heard, our understanding will deepen. Through meditating on a subject that we've already meditated on, our understanding will deepen. So during a retreat that we've already done, again, our understanding, our realization is a big word. So let's say our understanding will deepen. So therefore, we need to guard against this mistake and rather ensure that when we have the opportunity to engage in virtue, we do so, not being complacent with what we've done. Because if we are, we will not improve. The growth, the spiritual growth we've already attained, that will not develop further through being complacent. So here, this third division, joy's perseverance that cannot be stopped, this particularly shows the meaning of the term of perseverance within the term joyous perseverance. It means continuing and doing so repeatedly over a sustained period. So this is the meaning of to persevere within the term joyous perseverance. There's an illustration about a yak. So I'll just read from the text. The supreme beings of the past said that one should practice like a hungry yak grazing. As a yak tugs at one clump of grass, its eye is already fixed on the next. So the meaning here is that in the same way that when a yak is eating some delicious grass, it already knows which clump of grass it's going to bite next, we should be the same. When we have some free time, engage in virtuous activity and do so with delight, knowing that this opportunity is impermanent, it will end, and when it does, look forward to the next time, plan the next time. So now my time is about to end, so when I get the opportunity next, then I'm going to recite these mantras, I'm going to meditate on this topic, or whatever it may be. So in this mind, joyfully look forward to the next opportunity and be aware of how one will use it. And there's at the bottom of page 246 is another quotation. To practice with greater tenacity, the closer one gets to death, is the mark of a Dharma practitioner who has not been caught by the frost. So the meaning here is that we know that death will come, and that that the day of death approaches, moment by moment by moment, death approaches. So seeing this progression and death nearing, as a practitioner has meditated effectively on impermanence, their practice will grow and strengthen day by day. So on the one hand, the skilled practitioner will have death progressively nearing, but on the other hand, their Dharma practice will be progressively strengthening. So this balance of progression comes about through reflecting well on impermanence and seeing that death is certainly approaching, and therefore one needs to make continuous efforts, sustained efforts in virtuous practice. And in this way, one doesn't encounter the obstacle of laziness in terms of one's Dharma practice.
mandine jagar gi ani jo tibam gara jo chi gi ani nimire nimire ya ani jike ke jo cha pu ya ta ani cha je de ya ta ji gong je gong je go re ani ji chi bi nyam le da chi re nyam gong je go re di ga le ani ni ye cha pu ma cha pu ya ko ra ko ra ani ji cha sa de ya da ji ni gi sun chi ji go le
Then there's a quote, there's something here about Kali Lama Atisha. And so Lama Atisha was known for engaging in virtuous practices all day. So he'd meditate extensively every day. He would also then engage in not just the virtuous practice of meditation, but also physical virtuous practices such as making tzatzas, doing circumambulation, prostrations, and the like.
Jiru loma yorwa, loma diti ye, ane da joje pe tike gomja da, nyamne je mangbo che, dine cha kuya da, dine ke mangbo che de, ane tatsa suya di, da nganzi suya go, kunye se, kirong kalya ka nganzi suya go labdi, ane ya shu wale se nganzi suya go, kirong da kalya ka, dine ke mangbo che de, tatsa suya da nganzi suya go, ya shu wale se, si de, ane si nga joje ki,
And of course he was so engrossed in all these various virtuous activities, some of his students gave rise to concern that maybe he was going to wear himself out. So a student approached him and said, well, why don't we do these activities for you? For example, we'll make the satsas for you, and then you can relax. So Lama Atisha responded by saying, What, and I suppose the next thing is you'll want to eat my food for me. So what the meaning of what Atisha was saying here is that he needs to engage in virtuous practices himself because he wants to progress spiritually. So to progress spiritually, he needs to make the effort, he needs to work himself. If his students do as well, then very good. But by them doing it, they will progress. But he too needs to spiritually progress, and therefore he needs to engage in all these this variety of practices. So for example, if they were to eat his food for him, their hunger would be satiated, but his wouldn't. So similarly, he needs to eat his own meals. And as he wants to attain the various levels of the bodhisattva paths and Buddhahood itself, he himself needs to engage in spiritual practice. And then near the bottom of page 247, it mentions the, in summing up, it talks about the great importance of joyous perseverance. Because if a practitioner is very intelligent but lacks joyous perseverance, they're not going to grow spiritually because they will not utilize the skills and the abilities they have. In fact, they will go to waste. But another practitioner who's not so intelligent, who's average or maybe even below average, if they have very strong joyous perseverance, they will make great effort, and thereby they will easily overcome any handicaps they have, and they will mentally develop and progress spiritually.
Then there's a quotation at the bottom of page 247 from Jigme Lingpa. No intelligence, no power, no wealth or strength can help. Someone without diligence, he is like a boatman whose boat has everything but oars. So here, if someone is not so intelligent, but they have joyous perseverance, they will progress. But conversely, someone who is greatly intelligent, but lacks joyous perseverance, they will not. Because if one lacks joyous perseverance, one will not come to acquire the knowledge that one requires as a basis for effective meditation. And secondly, one won't engage in meditation. And thereby, one will not be able to overcome one's problems and difficulties and suffering. So this then, here in this verse, is likened to a boat without oars. If a boat doesn't have oars, it cannot move forward. So this shows the function of joyous perseverance. Joyous perseverance serves to power one's practice and speed one towards the attainment of one's various spiritual goals.
타바다 탐지 김고 하더라 타년에 두고 레세지 안들라 지수 뭐 되지 전력이 되지
And then tonight we've of course been looking at this practice, this perfection of joyous perseverance. So joyous perseverance, as we've come to hear, is a particularly important mind because it ensures that we engage in virtuous practices, and moreover, it ensures that that particular practice results in a tremendous amount of virtue coming. So through engaging the practice with joyous perseverance, so much more virtue is accumulated from that same practice. Then we also looked at the obstacle to the arisal of joyous perseverance, and that is the mind of laziness. And in fact, laziness isn't only an obstacle to the arisal of the mind of joyous perseverance, but it is a very powerful obstacle to us engaging in any Dharma practice at all. So we looked at the three different kinds of laziness. And we spoke firstly about the laziness of discouragement, feeling something's too difficult for us. Then we looked at the laziness of procrastination, where we keep seeing the importance of Dharma practice, but we keep delaying it. And then we spoke about the a third type, the laziness of attachment to improper activities, which is where we our time, our physical and mental energy is consumed by ordinary mundane activities. And so here, when one's overcome by these kinds of laziness, especially the attachment to improper activities and procrastination, then one keeps putting off what is important until another day, because one's priorities are wrong. One overvalues these ordinary activities, these mundane activities. One overvalues the benefit that comes from them, and undervalues the benefit that comes from our spiritual practice. So we also then spoke tonight about the antidote to laziness. And this then comes from thinking about the opportunity that we have, reflecting on this precious human rebirth that we have, and reflecting then that now we have the opportunity to utilize what remains of our life and utilize it well. We have good conditions to practice the Dharma, we've met a Dharma teacher, and we now have the opportunity to hear teachings, to read texts, and to reflect on their meaning, again, repeatedly over a sustained period. And we should think like this continuously until we come to see the preciousness of the opportunity, and then marry it with the reflection on impermanence, seeing that the impermanence of our life, the only thing that is certain is that this life will end. When it ends is completely uncertain. So having that understanding of impermanence, together with the great value of this rebirth that we have, we then will not want to waste a moment. And thinking like this then, we will wholeheartedly prioritize our virtuous activities first and foremost, and we'll still do the ordinary activities we need to do, but we'll see them in their proper perspective. And thereby we will not be overcome by laziness, and joyous perseverance will naturally arise within us. And so with this mind of joyous perseverance, this mind that takes delight in engaging in virtue and perseveres through all difficulties, engages in practice repeatedly over a sustained period until these are accomplished, then one accumulates so much more merit from engaging in that same practice. And this will ensure happiness in this life for ourselves, benefit for all those that we come in contact with, to ensure happiness and benefits in our future lives through good rebirths and continued progression towards the attainment of our spiritual goals. So this now is the teaching on the perfection of joyous perseverance. And so next time we'll come to the fifth perfection, that of concentration. So we'll start here and then on page 248. And if there are questions, then please do ask. Peter.
In the context of this teaching of joyous perseverance, you know, like working in the Dharma Centre, the work we do in the daily work of the Dharma Centre, of people who have virtuous activity in the same way as meditating in another capacity.
Working at the Dharma Center, we engaging in virtuous activities working here. Is this of equal worth to, for example, meditating on the topics of the Dharma?
You're often busy when you're working in the Dharma Center.
Yes. So I'm working in the Dharma Center, which is said to be virtuous, but I'm busy. So I think that means I don't always have so much time to meditate.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Then another example, also to talk about lekker jiggyare. Then also Joe's apoyin. Then also to talk about lekker jenna. The gewe lekkere, also some gyare, meet some lab gyare. Then di dan nacho jota ki kola gom gyapna. Di tangyum dan drabo di chikpa repe. Then he gabla di dona kare, gay lake, jiggy, or yina draws up again, non chicky cola, some of them do so yamare.
I did one, then the Tana lacked her, the Kiri lacate, the Tana to get jiggy, the human man to get chigan the jiggy and the yar, and jiggy, chihaya, pimpy, chow, chisel, and jig, and the 11 inches of their training and Mongoshi, and the Mongoshi, and the Tuna.
So it's a good question. The work that you and others do here certainly is virtuous work, because it's work that you will be doing with a motivation to bring benefit to others. So it's not like your day is taken up just looking after yourself, having a good time, cooking delicious food just for yourself, and you know, just hanging out. So that is really almost certainly going in the direction of laziness and being overcome by one's own self-interest. So rather, you and others are engaged in virtuous work. So this is certainly something to take joy in yourself. But this, though, should not be separate from your practice, nor from your meditation practice. It should be done together, because spiritual practice, Buddhist practice, is to be done together with physical activity. So the way that these work together is that at the start of the day, when you get up, you should take some time to reflect on the day ahead and generate a motivation. So generate the motivation that today everything I do will be motivated to benefit others. And you can reflect on in terms of bodhicitta, like we discuss most weeks. And you generate this mind of bodhicitta, generating the intention that everyone I meet today, I will try and have a beneficial activity towards them. Every activity I do, whether it's directly for someone or indirectly for others, I will do with a beneficial motivation. So thinking like this, first of all, you're meditating now in the morning. Secondly, you're generating joy because the mind becomes happy when thinking like this. And you do this every day repeatedly over a sustained period, even when you maybe don't feel like it. Then you're persevering through difficulties. So in this way, you're generating joy as perseverance, and you're meditating. So you are doing some practice at the start of the day. Then you've got your motivation and you engage in your various activities during the day. And here, remind yourself repeatedly of what you're doing, of what you meditated on this morning, sorry. So some activities you need to concentrate. So you do the various kinds of work, you have to concentrate on that work. But there are always times when one doesn't have to be so concentrated on the task, when one is sipping your tea or boiling the kettle or going from here to there. And in those moments, remind yourself of your meditation that morning. Remind yourself of that motivation. Today, everyone I meet, I'm going to... I've been a mother in a past life. They have shown me tremendous kindness in that role and other roles. And I'm going to repay that kindness. And I'm going to do everything I can to help them. And this just takes a moment. And if you've reflected effectively in the morning, and especially over repeatedly over a period of time, then it only takes a moment to remind oneself. So in this way, one's meditation impacts throughout the day. Because here, it's important not to have a misunderstanding that thinks that meditation is something done on a cushion with crossed legs and folded hands, or on a chair with a straight back. Meditation certainly is done like that. But meditation should be done throughout all our activities, because it's thinking. It's thinking about the Dhamma. It's reminding ourselves of these habitual ways of thinking, bringing those consciously to mind. And when they spontaneously arise, keeping them present. So this is an important understanding to get, that meditation and Buddhist practice isn't just done sitting down. It's done in all our activities. If one is cultivating calm abiding or meditating with calm abiding, then one is sitting. But otherwise, the analytical meditation, this is what we all engage in, and it's something we should try and do throughout all our activities. Because much of the day, we don't have to be particularly concentrated on one thing. We can always call to mind our motivation. And this is what we should do. And this is Buddhist practice. So thank you. It's a good question. Other question? No, thank you very much. Until next time.
Thank you. Sabi Rabbi Jodhi Shikhani